podcast from AusCert's 2009 conference is brought to you by Microsoft. For full risky business coverage of AusCert, point your browser to risky.biz.
Hello everyone and welcome to Risky Business 2. I'm Patrick Gray. Don't forget that if you want to see all of our AusCert coverage, please go to risky.biz/AusCert. That's AusCert. And if you'd like to subscribe to this audio feed, this RSS feed where you can get all of our AusCert podcasts, just go to risky.biz/feeds. In this interview, we're speaking to Scott McIntyre, who works for Dutch ISP Access for All. And yesterday I tracked him down at AusCert to chat about trends he's seeing in VoIP fraud. Enjoy.
Indeed, it's sort of an ironic and inherited risk that we've taken on. We are owned by a telco, and obviously the telco industry is very familiar with various types of telephone fraud. We as an ISP, however, had to really jump and learn a lot very, very quickly. So this is an old-style fraud that has just simply been migrating into the new world. So it is something that we've had to gain a lot of familiarity with, in a very short period of time.
Can you describe to us the mechanics of the basic VoIP fraud scam?
Well, a lot of it actually inherits from traditional telco fraud. For example, a business may have what's known as a PBX or a PABX, which allows access for a company to make 10, 20 different phone lines, that type of thing. Well, imagine that model, but your PBX is essentially a Linux computer running somewhere inside of your house or your basement. So all that's happened is the same model of being able to abuse a multi-line system to make phone calls to Kathmandu or Cuba or anywhere else in the world has just been replicated inside of the home use environment.
In the home use environment?
Absolutely. This isn't something that just affects companies. I think that the cost of entry of PBX software, when you look at the free software packages that are out there.
Like Asterix and whatnot.
Excellent. And it's a fantastic package. There's several other OpenSIP type projects that are out there, SIP being the underlying technology for most voice over IP installations. They are very cost attractive for a lot of individuals as well as corporations. Imagine at home being able to have your own micro PBX, which gives a separate phone line for all of your individual children, for all of your pets, for everybody in the house, and so on. It can handle faxes, it can handle voicemail and all of that. And when that technology is point and click simple to deploy, along come the point and click simple exploits.
Well, I was about to say, usually when something's point and click easy to deploy, it's point and click easy to own as well.
Yeah.
But I guess, are we seeing the same type of, because the typical PBX scam, someone will get in there, they'll own the box, and then they'll start selling calling cards on the street, call your friends back in Pakistan for 10 cents a minute sort of thing. Is that the same type of scam that we're seeing now with VoIP fraud, or is it just old school freaker type of guys trying to get free calls?
Well, you certainly see the old school stuff. There's no doubt about that, because that was a guaranteed business model for a lot of people. But the calling card scams are actually a very attractive profit revenue. If you're a bad guy, a miscreant, you go out there, you publish these little calling cards that are good from anywhere in the world, and you tell people, just phone this phone number, enter in these following digits as an access code, and then call your friends wherever you are. Now, by using voice over IP systems, whether it be a PBX environment or an Asterisk server or whatever, the cost for these bad guys to be able to deploy these systems is essentially zero, and the uptime is essentially 100%, because there are so many systems they can relay and bounce the calls through. So indeed, the calling card model is an incredibly attractive one that can cost an individual or a company or even a provider quite a lot of money in a very short amount of time.
Are there other types of scams involving SIP and VoIP, or is it really just about the calling card one? Because it's an oldie, it's a goodie, it makes money. But are there other ways to skin this particular cat,
Scott? Unfortunately, there are. as many ways as you can think of, there are to make money, there are ways of stealing or defrauding money. There are various scams. Obviously, we just said the calling card issues. You have people who engage in what's known as toll fraud abuse, people who essentially own expensive telephone numbers and then use voice over IP systems to essentially call themselves.
That's an oldie but a goodie. Yeah, they set up some international account in Tuvalu or something like that, and then high toll. Yeah, that's a
bingo.
That's a good
and
one.
So that's
yeah.
a really good way of making money. You know, you just forward the call to something that makes you a lot of money, and then you get people that are using the VoIP and the SIP infrastructure to pay for things like online gambling, to pay for online massive multiplayer online role playing games.
D- Tell me how that works, because I've got to know how you can use VoIP fraud to buy credit at an online casino.
Well, it works fairly simply. A lot of these online casinos already have a, you know, call this number, this premium rate telephone number, or even a free phone number, but you're on the phone for a certain amount of time, and it charges your GSM phone, or they have an arrangement with a telco to simply charge your home phone. Now, this can actually work over voice over IP as well. There's no reason why not. It's a telephone number, and a lot of providers are working with standard geographical phone numbers that look like you've got a Sydney phone number, you've called from what appears to be a Sydney line, you make the call to the online gambling site, they charge that phone number $50, $100, whatever the amount is that you want credit to your account. Now, if you want to make a lot of money for online gambling very quickly, perhaps for doing something like money laundering, imagine having 20, 30, 40, or 50 computers all calling this using the same SIP credentials, the same voice over IP credentials, in order to prime your online gambling account. You can imagine how the really bad criminals then can use that to essentially exchange money with other online criminals to do whitewashing of funds.
But how would that billing mechanism work? I mean, I assume that unless there was a pre-existing business relationship between my VoIP provider and that online casino, how are they going to bill my number? I mean, I've got a SIP account at home through my ISP. If I wanted to dial one of those premium numbers, I can't imagine that I would actually be able to access a premium number from my SIP phone.
It's actually going to depend upon your provider. Some providers will put in some form of filtering technology, either to protect you or to offer it as a service that helps you protect you and your family. Certainly, it's something that we advocate. We strongly believe that parents, for example, need to be able to say, my phone line, my SIP line, just like your normal telephone line, cannot call premium rate numbers. But that is a configurable thing. Technologically speaking, there's absolutely no reason why your SIP account can't call any phone number anywhere in the world. And indeed, that is the technology that most consumers want. They want to be able to pick up a phone just like they've always done for the last 50, 100 years, whatever, and have it work.
So as a provider, I mean, this leads me on to my next question, which is, as a provider, what can you actually do about this?
I think a lot of it comes down to monitoring, understanding call usage patterns, working with your customers, and making sure that you have an environment that doesn't make it fraud friendly. You need to work with the customers to understand what is it that you want to do with telephony. And as an ISP, that's something that we've had to learn. Obviously, telcos have known this for quite some time.
Well, this is what I was going to say. It strikes me as strange, but we're really taking this giant leap backwards in terms of you know, we've had a telephone system that, for the most part, is actually fairly secure, and it's fairly difficult to, you know, own your local exchange and then start. I mean, well, it depends on who you are, but it's not something that you see a great deal of anymore. We've got a bit of a problem with PBX fraud and things like that, but it seems like moving to SIP is a pretty significant leap backwards in terms of security.
I think that it is a massive increase of risk to a lot of people who were not expecting it. I think there's a sort of an inherent sense that if it's on the computer, it's somehow slightly more secure. Ironically, I think security professionals can argue quite the opposite.
Oh, if they knew.
If they knew, indeed. But I think that people want to use this technology and however they are going to use it. Look at the success of something like Skype. At the end of the day, people want to be able to call their friends anywhere around the world. And obviously, as a provider, we want to be able to give them the services they want and that they're going to pay for. So there is a very much an economic decision at the foundation for offering these services, even though it may be a step backwards from the closed source, closed world of traditional telephony into the very open world of SIP. But that is very much what the people want. Now, the challenge is to the provider to try to deploy an environment which actually offers that security, offers that financial security to customers, as well as the technological security.
Can you think of any case studies of particular instances of fraud that you've been involved in, obviously from the defense side, not the offense side?
Yeah, I couldn't possibly comment as the former. I think one of the things that we have seen as a provider is a specific situation going back to those calling card scenarios. We had a customer who had set up their own PBX, a virtual PBX essentially running an asterisk type environment on a computer inside of their office. And they just didn't know much about it. And within a very short period of time, tens of thousands of euros worth of telephone calls were made to a certain country which has a penchant for tourists from America wearing orange jumpsuits, shall we say.
Aha.
And it is not a typical thing for the average customer to understand that this can actually affect them. They've never had this problem before. Why do they have this problem now? So in terms of a case study, we have actually seen the packets, the actual internet traffic, might be originating from a country such as Bulgaria or Malaysia or somewhere else on the internet, and it's being routed through a computer somewhere located in, say, The Hague or Amsterdam or whatever, in order to call wherever, Argentina, Cuba, doesn't really matter. Now, explaining this concept to a lot of customers has proven very difficult. So we as providers have had to develop a new way of interacting with our customers so that they understand this technology as well as all of the other technologies we make available to them and understand the risks. And when you show them how it happens and how it can affect them, the light goes on, their eyes open up wide, and of course they shake in fear just a little bit.
It's funny, actually, that you believe that user education can work. It's wonderful.
I must say, I think that user education has a very strong role to play. I'm not necessarily saying that it will always work, but I think that there is a class of customer and a type of person who wants to be secured, and if you give them that information and you give them that data, they will do it. Think about it this way. The vast majority of what happens online, including VoIP calls and SIP and all that, is absolutely perfectly normal. It is secure, it is safe, it is valid, it is not fraudulent, and we're talking about an incredible minority, less than a fraction of 1% in typical cases.
You sound like eBay. Anyway, continue.
I haven't bought anything off eBay lately, but I think that people need to understand that we don't want to make it sound like the sky is falling.
There are
very strong risks with any new technology. SIP is very young.
Yep.
It is very new. And there are going to be real implications financially to people if they don't understand.
Well, I was just about to ask, in that particular instance that you just mentioned, did the consumer wind up paying for that?
We came to an agreement with them. I think that they had to understand that obviously they had set up an environment that wasn't the one that we sold them. They took on some of that responsibility, but we also took on some of the responsibility to help them better understand.
Mm.
I think financially, when you talk about these types of large bills and so on, obviously you want to encourage the customer to stay a customer. But at the same time, the old metaphor of if you're a parent and you invite somebody in to be a babysitter and look after your children while you're gone, and that person ends up calling all around the world and generates a huge, you know, $5,000 Australian phone bill, well, who is liable in that case?
Mm.
You know, the parents have to take that up and make very careful choices about who has access to their technology. The difference with looking at the SIP environment and voice over IP is that all of those computer Trojan problems where the bad guys can be sitting around the world might put you at additional risk.
Yeah, it's not the babysitter, it's some guy in, you know, Botswana.
It's highly possible, but that doesn't discount the possibility of the insider threat of the babysitter. And indeed, imagine a piece of software that's running on a laptop or on a computer that happens to be visiting your network. That threat can very much come from inside and cost you financially.
Okay, well, Scott McIntyre, thank you very much for joining Risky Business.
Thanks, Patrick.